looking for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, coast to coast, border to border, in 29 states on cable TV systems with CRN Digital, and beaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, American FM on Live365.com. Welcome to our program. For this Cinco de Mayo, buenos dias, senora y señorita, and señoras. You can tell how bad my Spanish is. Anyhow, welcome back. Tom DeLay, under attack, big time. Now even some of his corporate sponsors, American Airlines, Verizon, others, announcing that no, they're not going to give him any more money. Many of his own Republican friends are leaving the fold, as it were. And so the Frontiers of Freedom Institute, George Landreth, the president of Frontiers of Freedom Institute, has decided to go to his defense. Frontiers of Freedom Institute describes themselves as a public policy think tank devoted to promoting strong national defense, free markets, individual liberty, and constitutionally limited government. Sounds good. What does Tom DeLay have to do with any of that stuff, George Landreth?
Well, I think he's been a friend of many of those principles. And ultimately, this issue is not necessarily directly related to those, but I think in general, being a society of laws as opposed to of individuals or men, that it makes sense for us to be fair in our administration of the law. And what I think is happening is people are basically saying he's broken the law, he's done this, he's done that, and nearly as I can tell, he hasn't broken the law. But as long as you can kind of attach scandal and his name together, then it, you know, I think the press feels good about it. And if I were the Democrats, I'd feel good about it, too. But I'm not sure that's actually a fair representation of what's happened.
But you say in your description of the Frontiers of Freedom Institute, and by the way, your website is?
FF.org.
Okay, FF.org. You say that you're in favor of individual liberty. Tom DeLay has been an unrepentant, unabashed, proud to do it, toady of big corporate interests in the United States. How does that promote individual liberty?
Well, I don't know that I would characterize his career that way. To me, individual liberty has to do with the idea that we have a limited government that doesn't interfere with your or my ability to, for example, speak freely, to enjoy the opportunity to work and live and worship or not worship as we please. I think I wouldn't characterize his political career as being one that has harmed any of those rights. I think that he's, you know, I mean, I think people can disagree with all kinds of things from different political people. I think it'd be hard to argue, though, that he's been a person to kind of try.
I'm just trying to figure out why you would defend this guy if this is really what you're all about. I think that you and I probably agree that we would like to see government that's not in our bedrooms, that's not following us around, that's not tapping our phones, that's not opening our mail. And those are all things that Tom DeLay has voted against. He's voted in favor of a government that will be in our bedrooms. He's voted in favor of a government that would be opening our mail. He's voted in favor of a government that would require us to provide all sorts of ID just to walk down the streets. Those are not the principles that you just talked about. And then there's the other side of what government does, which is government in its protective capacity. Government, you know, we the people collectively say, hey, we'd like to have police departments. We're going to pay for them. You know, we have the protective commons. We would like to have fire departments. We will pay for them. And part of its protective capacity is we would like to be protected from the predators among us, from those people among us who would seek to by stripping out our national force. And he's worked against a government that would protect us consistently and in favor of the government that would intrude into our bedrooms. How can you possibly defend this man?
That's well, first of all, I think, you know, as an attorney, I guess I look at the world and I say to myself, I think the rules need to be applied fairly. And so if the allegation against him is we don't like how he voted, I don't view his voting record the way you view it. I mean, I think, you know, as I see it, our air is getting cleaner and our water is getting cleaner. So we're obviously passing laws that are having some impact.
Well, respectfully, I would say the studies in the last 3 years indicate that actually our air is starting to get dirtier and our water is getting dirtier. And Bush's policies certainly are contributing to that tremendously. I mean, he's saying, let's take the policy of, for example, mercury emissions into the air and let's push it back 15 years before we start enforcing it.
Well, the mercury issue is an interesting one because America produces virtually no mercury because of the technologies we developed. The mercury problem isn't a problem of United States production. It's a problem, quite frankly, either from forest fires in the United States, which ultimately is, I don't think we can lay that at Tom DeLay's feet, or it's China and India.
Well, 40%. That's 40%. 60% of the mercury that's in the air in the United States comes from coal-powered plants, by and large, some of it from oil-powered plants, and the way that it gets into the forests so that it can be re-released in the forest fires that you're talking about is because it came down in the rain, it got absorbed by the trees, it got into the cellulose, and then when the trees burn, it gets back up there again. It's still our mercury. It's still from our coal and oil-fired plants.
But that's 1% of the mercury in the world, is my point. So the United States...
You mean the total amount of mercury in the world?
The United States produces about 1 or 2% of the mercury that's in the world atmosphere.
But I'm concerned about the mercury that's causing an epidemic. Some are concerned, maybe causing an epidemic of autism in the United States. I'm concerned about the mercury that has caused 40% of our waterways in the United States now to be rendered unsafe to eat fish out of. The mercury that is harming our children. And Tom DeLay is out there saying, hey, no problem, guys. We should just, we should change the rules on this and have more mercury. Whether it's 1% of the planet's mercury or 1/10,000th of the planet's mercury, if it's harming and killing our children, I'm opposed to it.
I understand if it's doing those things, but I think the science on that is not accurate. But nonetheless, what you're saying is you don't like Tom DeLay's policies.
No,
okay
I'm not. Yes, of course. I don't like his policies.
What I was asking you
is how can you say that you're in favor of individual liberty when Tom DeLay is consistently working against it? This has nothing to do with whether or not he should be, impeached or whatever. I mean, we'll get into that in just a second. But how could you do that?
That's what the debate is. If Tom DeLay, if let's assume for the sake of the argument we both agree, and I don't like Tom DeLay, if he were accused of murder, I would still say he needs to be accorded all the rights that you'd expect in a society of laws to determine if he's guilty of that.
I absolutely agree, and he should have his day in
court.
All
these things that are a scandal, ethical violations, and the fact is that they're all trumped up. He hasn't broken the law. He's done what is permitted under the law. And he's done things that other Democrats, on the exact same what I object to.
So, George Landreth, you're saying that because other people did it, that makes it okay for Tom DeLay?
No, I'm not saying that. It wasn't illegal for either of them to do it. But what I find interesting...
Then why is it that the Republicans are the ones leading the charge against Tom DeLay?
I don't think they are. I think what's finally happened is the Republicans realize they want to have an ethics, because if they have an ethics... The panel can then look at the facts and have a hearing and then a determination that there is nothing done. As long as there's no hearing, the Democrats win, because then they can continue to talk about violations of ethics, and they can be fast and loose with the rules and the facts and make all kinds of accusations that make the front page of the New York Times. But there's no there.
But it's Republicans like Congressman Charlie Bass of New Hampshire, who says, I think the Republicans are more polarized than they've ever been. You've got Republicans like Christopher Shea of Connecticut, Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island, Christy Todd Whitman, that have come out and spoken out against Tom DeLay. So there's something smelly here.
Well, I realize there are certainly, the Republican Party actually has a fairly broad spectrum. It's not just, conservatives. It has conservatives, it has moderates, it had liberals. And I do think that because Tom DeLay is a conservative, it doesn't surprise me that the more liberal element of the party is quicker to get rid of him.
Tom DeLay is not a conservative. He's a corporate toady. A conservative, he's a radical. He's in favor of changing things. Conservatives, hey, I worked on Barry Goldwater's campaign in 1964. I went door to door for him. I understand the conservative. I've read half of his, in fact, just last year I reread No Apologies, his autobiography. I can tell you, Barry Goldwater would be throwing up right now. He's turning over in his grave at what Tom DeLay is doing and what he has done and what most of the Republicans in Congress are doing and the people like you are defending.
Well, I'm not. First of all, I mean, what I'm defending is I think the charges of what we've just been discussing, which is that they accuse him of
that he's in bed with lobbyists for big corporations. He's taking money from lobbyists for big corporations.
Well, and but he's not done anything illegal. He's done everything by the law. So the question is, if we don't like how that's done...
But there hasn't been a trial. The Republicans have prevented from being an investigation of any of these things. So neither you nor me, neither one of us can say he's guilty or innocent.
Well, let's put it this way. I assume the Democrats have put out their very best shots against him. That seems like a logical conclusion. If I take everything they say as true, they have not laid out the basic case required to prove he broke the law. And so I don't even have to know what his defense is. All I have to know is that if I take everything as true, that's what you call a summary judgment motion. So he loses, so they lose, and he's exonerated. But at any rate, my point is, I think I agree with you that there's too much power in Washington, and people talk about that a lot. But the reason why there's a lot of power and money in Washington is because precisely, people say there's too much money in politics. Well, the reason there's money in politics is because there's power in Washington. If we want to get the money out of the politics, we have to get the power out of Washington. So I think that it makes sense for us to have a limited government. There's a reason why the dog catcher isn't getting people throwing money at him. And it's because the dog catcher can't screw your life up. He can't take your business from you. He can't confiscate your assets.
No, but Monsanto can and Citibank can, and the government should protect us from those organizations if they decide that they're going to harm us or if they take action. Not to just pick out those two.
I don't disagree with that. But my point, though, is if you want to get the power and the money out of Washington, we're going to have the federal government be less involved in our lives. I'm not suggesting...
Then let's roll back the Patriot Act, but let's not roll back environmental protections.
I'm not suggesting we need to roll... I mean, there's some environmental protections that are counterproductive, but I don't think they're all counterproductive. I think regulation is a bit like a stoplight. Stoplights have their place. You don't want them on every street corner, but you want them on the street corners that need them, and you certainly want stop signs that they need too, but you don't need them, every 50 feet along the road. And some people want too many, and some people want too few, and the trick is to have the right number.
I think the point is that what we want is government of, by, and for we the people in the United States once again, instead of government of, by, and for the big corporate interests or the interests of inherited wealth, which is the folks that Tom DeLay represents and the folks that you represent.
Well, I don't know that I represent people of inherited wealth. We're a small organization. I wish we had lots of
Where do you get your funding?
We get our funding from three sources, individuals, from corporations.
Individuals who have inherited wealth?
No, most of our donors are but most of our donors are in the, $10 to $25 a year range.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, great.
We have probably 15,000 donors, and I would estimate that, 95% of those donors give us less than $100 a year.
Yeah, okay. Well, George Landreth has been with us. George, thanks for coming in here and mixing it up with me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
George's website, ff.org. He's president of the Frontiers of Freedom Institute, and he's out there defending that crumb bum, Tom DeLay, in my opinion. Certainly not in George's. George, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Welcome back. The place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Interesting. Frontiers of Freedom Institute, not representing the interests of the wealth, inherited wealth and corporate power. And if so, they would be the first conservative think tank that has ever come on this program that doesn't get most of their money from large foundations that represent the interests of conservative inherited wealth. And so Louise just checked out mediatransparency.org during the break. And this $563,450 between 1996 and 2003. Let's see, the Earhart Foundation. To Frontiers of Freedom Institute. This is how much money they got from these big foundations. The Roe Foundation, $2,500. The William H. Donner Foundation, $25,000. $100,000 from the Sarah Scaife Foundation. You'll recall Richard Mellon Scaife, the guy who many say was the one who led the charge to bring down Bill Clinton. The Earhart Foundation, $20,000. The John M. Olin Foundation, $25,000. The Lynn and Harry Bradley Foundation, $10,000. The John M. Olin Foundation, $25,000. The Earhart Foundation, another $20,000. The Carthage Foundation, $35,000. And William H. and on and on and on and on it goes. So, in fact, some of them are actually specific to support missile defense. This was a specifically missile defense. Education on the missile defense. This was a grant from Harry and Bradley Lynn, or Harry, the Lind and Lindy and Harry Bradley Foundation. So, I don't know. I thought I could take him at his word. We'll have him back on some other time, and he can explain this to us, make sense out of it for us. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, because maybe there's a rational explanation. Maybe they're also getting money from George Soros, and they just didn't want to publish it, something. I don't know. Alan in Trumansburg? Is that it, Alan? Oop, hang on just a second, Alan. Let me turn the volume control up. There you go. Hey, Alan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. You're in Trumansburg. Is that Pennsylvania?
No, New York.
New York, okay.
Near Cornell.
Oh, yeah, okay, great. So what's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to argue with you, too, but I don't know after you took care of that friend of Tom DeLay's.
Well, feel free. I love to argue with people. You know, sometimes I get beat. Take a shot at me.
Okay. Well, on Monday, you took a call from Logan in New York City about voting reform and paper trails. You said the Republicans won't let Hillary's bill out of committee. It seems to me, if that's true, and I'm sure you're right, that it's practically a waste of time calling Congress about this issue.
Why?
Because if you convince your representative to see things your way, there's nothing they can do about it because the Republicans control Congress and the White House.
But I'm guessing at least half of the people listening to this program have Republicans as their members of Congress.
Oh,
call them up and make
okay.
a noise.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah, here's the next step I want to take, Alan, also. I would like to see people calling their Republican members of the House and Senate and saying, I'm really concerned about the possibility of Democrats hacking these voting machines. Please get rid of these voting machines because we're worried that George Soros or Barbara Streisand is going to fund Democratic hackers and they're going to get into the voting machines. And that'll get the Republicans sufficiently paranoid that they will do away with the voting machines.
Good point.
It's a strategy, huh?
I was looking at it from a Democratic representative.
Well, I think
point
that
of
we,
view.
You know, the fact of the matter is that there's some 70 members, Democratic members of the House, for example, voted against you and me on, for example, class action reform. A bunch of them voted. I don't have the numbers right in front of me right now. I'll have them after the break. A bunch of them voted against us on the bankruptcy bill. I mean, there are Democrats in Congress who are not remembering that they work for we the people, that they work for you and me. And they need to be reminded. And there are a few Democrats in the Senate as well. So I think it's a good thing to call 1-877-SOB-USOB. That's the telephone number for the Capitol Hill for Congress. And ask for your member of Congress and tell them what you think on these important issues. Alan, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from
I had a little more. Can you carry me over?
Sure, yeah, hang on. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middle.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the True People's Radio, telling the truth that multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know about. We were talking with Alan in Trumansburg, and Alan, I got to say, the only people that I hold over a break and the only people that get moved to the front of the line are people who call and say they're going to argue with me. I hope you are going to keep to that.
Okay. Yeah, I'll let you have it.
Okay, go for it.
Assume for a moment that we fail in our attempt to convince Republicans to allow Hillary's bill out of committee to get an up or down vote.
Okay.
the game's not over at that point. I think the game should move to the states, and we should be calling our state representatives.
I agree. We're not arguing, Alan.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to cut you off here. We're not arguing.
Well, Logan asked you on Monday. He said, are we going to have another fake election? And you said, yes, that's almost a certainty.
Yeah.
Now, I'm saying you're wrong. It's not almost a certainty. I think we have a real chance on this. The paper ballot optical scan systems are cheaper, more reliable, and much less prone to hanky-panky.
Yes and no. I mean, the Diebold central tabulator that Howard Dean hacked into on Topic A with Tina Brown on live national television and in 90 seconds reversed the outcome of an election in a totally untraceable way was a central tabulator for optical scan voting. All of those votes that are optically scanned get sent into a PC, and that PC can be hacked. It's just, unfortunately, even if people are counting ballots by hand and calling up the county office and saying, we had 712 votes here for Joe and 1,622 for Sally, they still probably will get entered into a computer that can be hacked. I mean, what we have to have is a system that is completely within itself. It's like this: the CIA and the NSA, for example, they have computer systems that are not part of the internet. They have their own internet. The military, they have their own domain. They have their own internet, and it's not the internet. It's a separate thing. It's a parallel universe, and that same sort of thing needs to be done for our voting systems. It has to be owned, run, and operated by we the people, not by private corporations. And my point when I was talking about that, I think we're going to have another hacked election, was that what we need to be doing, what the Democratic Party's number one priority should be right now, is organizing, ideally with somebody like John Zogby, organizing exit polls for the 2006 elections so that they can identify voter fraud when it happens and they can start nailing people, prosecuting people, raising, you know, getting outraged people out in the streets. Let's have a Ukraine here, because, I mean, the split in the Ukraine, it was showing that the bad guy won by 5 points when actually he lost by 5 points. In the United States, the exit polls showed that George Bush lost by 5 points, but John Kerry lost by 5 points when you look at the machines. I mean, this to me is just proof positive of another stolen election, and we need to be raising hell about it. Alan, thanks for the call, and thanks for raising the topics. I appreciate it. And thanks for, you know, trying to argue with me. Good start.
You've got a great fallback plan there for when we have an election stolen. I agree with your argument that how we should deal with that. But the first argument is to not have an election stolen.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But I think it's
the 2006 election.
Yeah, Alan, I'm sorry. I agree with you, but it's just not going to happen. You're not going to see these voting machines go away in the next 15 months. It's just not going to happen. I mean, you know, the Secretary of State of Vermont is a friend. I mean, they plan these things out a year, 2 years in advance, 3 years in advance. It's just not going to happen. We have to be raising hell, and we need to be planning for the 2006 election right now. Armin in Florida on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Armin.
Hey, I was going to talk to you about a conversation I had pretty involved with Harry Brown. And, you know,
you're talking about Harry Brown, the gold bug guy?
No, the libertarian.
Yeah, he also made his living, I thought he did. I thought he made his living back in the early days selling gold, but I could be wrong. But, yeah, okay, Harry Brown. I know who you're talking
about. Well, before I go down that road, I have an opinion of him, too, besides our conversation. And if you want to know a lot about, like, you're obviously aware of different entities or people that, you know, try to profess to be a certain ideology, just follow their money.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, Harry Brown actually is a guy, and most of the libertarians, frankly, are people who I think really, you know, believe that they're following the right path. They're people who are following some level of conviction, and they're misguided, unfortunately. They don't understand how democracy works. They think that capitalism is democracy, and it ain't. It ain't. Capitalism is an economic system. Democracy is a political system. And the economic system will eat the political system alive if it's not regulated and controlled. And that's what the libertarians don't understand, because they've read too much Ayn Rand. And Ayn Rand didn't understand it because she grew up in the Soviet Union. And she thought that capitalism was the answer to everything because it was the antithesis of the form of government that took away her father's business. I mean, it's a kind of a bizarre reality, but there it is. And these are the folks who are the heavy thinkers, you know, the Cato Institute folks, the heavy thinkers of the conservatives. And they're wrong.
Well, Tom, yeah. You know, and they're all getting a steady paycheck and full benefits and everything, and they feel secure in their environment. So that kind of spoils the ultimate philosophy in application that they project when you take in the predatory capitalism. So anyway, he finally conceded to me, and we had a very heated debate, that I said, look, I'm not in love with the ideology of a government being the necessary superior, but here's the problem in reality. If you have predatory capitalism versus, you could say, predatory government. At least when you have a government and it's the main focal point of power philosophically, there is always that hope for change by the voting method. If it's pure, like you want it to be and I want it to be, not the way it is now by corporation criminals. And the reason being, what proves that is the Soviet Union, ultimately, it failed. The people brought it down.
Right, and with regard to the votes, it was
right.
Stalin who said, it doesn't matter who votes. Voting isn't
right.
What counts. What counts is who counts the votes.
But here's my philosophy, and this proves your point and my point, too, ultimately. We, you and I are right on the same page. We need to have a government of, by, and for the people, not the corporation or the elite wealthy, you know, super wealthy people like we have now. Now, the point is that this gentleman you had on, this lawyer, he kept talking and saying, well, you know, he didn't do anything illegal. Well, you know, look,
Tom
DeLay. Hitler didn't break any laws until we finally went after his butt.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, that was
so,
my point,
so
that neither
that,
one of us
one
can
point.
Say.
But I want to say one other thing. Here's
sure.
the point I want to say. Ultimately, if one's going to win out on the other, you know, predatory capitalism, like this guy you had on, this lawyer, okay, I don't want to live in a world where a handful of corporations own all the water, they own all the food, the means of food production, they own all the means of manufacturing, all the means of the things.
I got the whole
I
rant, Armin. I'm with you, right? I'm with you 100%. And
because you'll never change that if it's privately held, because you won't have a vote and there will be no.
That's right. It took the American Revolution to overthrow that, because essentially what you're describing is England in the 18th century, 1700s England, and it was the British East India Company was doing this, you know, making the music that the government was dancing to, and it's feudalism, and that's how Europe was ruled for hundreds of years, and that's what the cons want to take us back to. You're absolutely
and
right.
Well, that's because they're all getting super retirements they feel secure with. They're getting super health care.
Sure, it's in their interest.
Getting,
this is they want to make a government of, by, and for them, not for us. I'm absolutely right there with you, Armin. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Alan is on the line in Atlanta. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Yes, during the last Democratic runoff for president, a lot of people think that the machines were hacked to put Kerry in as a runner-up.
Oh, really?
Who
thinks that?
I heard people call in and think that.
You mean to right-wing talk show hosts?
People left think that.
I would love to hear people calling right-wing talk show hosts and saying that machines were hacked to put Kerry in. I would love it. I want to create a paranoia among the right that the liberals are planning to hack these machines, because, you know, ironically, the voting machine companies, one of the biggest, the one that Chuck Hagel was the president of, was started by a couple of brothers who are members of an organization. One of them is a member of an organization that believes that the Bible should replace the Constitution here in the United States. It's a little on the right-wing side, you might say. And the other, Diebold, it's president. It's international president, wrote a letter saying that he was going to deliver Ohio for the Republican Party. And apparently he did. And so, I mean, here you've got these Republican-connected, right-wing-leaning corporations running and owning these voting machines. And I would love it to get them out of, if getting them out of there takes scaring the conservatives, the Republicans. I think it's a great thing. Yes, in all probability, Alan, lots of voting machines were hacked and votes for John Kerry were added to them. Pass it along. Spread the word.
Yeah, maybe in the next runoff, we'll make sure that we won't have the use of machines for the Democrats in the runoff next time.
There you go.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks, Alan. I never quite sure. Well, often I'm quite sure, but you never quite know where folks are coming from on these things. I'll tell you, if you have an opportunity, if you're one of these folks who's on the internet and you get onto these weblogs, the blogs, go to the conservative blogs. Go visit the conservative blogs. They're very easy to find. You know, start out with Newsmax.com and just go down the list. Go to the right-wing blogs and start posting stuff about how the Democrats are conspiring and probably that nasty guy George Soros, and if you really want them to think that you're one of them, point out that he's a liberal and he's Jewish. That'll get the Pat Buchanan anti-Semites going as well. And go into the weblogs and say the liberals are conspiring to hack the voting machines in the 2006 election, and we have to stop them right now. And the only way we can stop them is to have a voter verifiable paper trail. We've got to do that right now. Otherwise, these liberals who are getting all this money, these terrible liberals at MoveOn.org and whatnot, otherwise they're going to steal our elections. We can't let that happen. We've got to put these voting machines in the hands of career civil servants who have no dog in the fight, who are not political appointees like Ken Blackwell was, although yeah, you need to pick some Democratic senator or state someplace, and like that. And get them all upset. Maybe we could have a movement. I mean, there are Republicans, actually, who have signed on with Rush Holt's bill in the House of Representatives. I'm not sure about Hillary's in the Senate, but I know Rush Holt has a number of Republicans going along with him. Steve in Ohio has some thoughts on this. Hey, Steve, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, hello, Tom. It's wonderful to talk to you.
Well, thanks for calling.
I've kicked this around for a long time. The bar graphs, you know how you can have bar codes?
Yeah.
If you had a piece of paper that had... You know, one of the biggest complaints I've always seen with the voting machines is you never know if your vote got counted. You don't know on paper if it got counted or not.
Right.
What if you were able to use the barcodes and account for that number system, and then when you walk away from the polling booth, you've got a piece of paper that's got your number on it. And then somewhere along the line, they print up a list, and it shows all the numbers that were voted for and all the numbers that were voted against. You look up there, you compare your numbers, say, yes, there's my vote. I voted for that person.
Yeah, it sounds good, Steve.
You keep that with
you. Hang on just a second. Hold on to this thought for just a minute. What you're suggesting, and it actually, you know, at one time I actually thought, hey, maybe this is an idea, because we've discussed this before, is if I go in and vote, that some record will be kept that says Tom Hartman voted this way in these races on this date, right? Or that Steve voted this way on these races in this date. Some sort of
obvious
record.
Yes, but if it's a random generated number and it doesn't reference back to you, all you have is the piece of paper that shows that number. You're the only one that knows that number. The voting polling people don't know who did it. They can't come after you and say, well, you voted for that side.
Well, if it's a random generated
that number.
Go ahead.
Right? You're the only one that knows.
Yeah, I understand that.
Number.
But see, if it's a randomly generated number, that means that somebody looking at the list of numbers would be looking at gibberish, which is, in my mind, a good thing, because I don't want, frankly, elected politicians to know how I voted. I want my vote to be private, particularly in this day and age when George W. Bush and the Bush administration are forbidding corporations from sending representatives to trade talks who gave money to the Kerry campaign. And they just did this with Nokia, the cell phone company manufacturer. They wanted to send some people down to South America to an international conference on cell phone communications. And this was like techies, you know, a bunch of engineers getting together to discuss which frequencies were best for where. And the Bush administration would not allow several people from Nokia to go on this meeting because they had contributed, one of them had contributed $250 to the Kerry campaign. I don't want that information to be available, frankly. I don't think that the individual contributions, for that matter, should be available, although they are right now. But And that's why. But if the number is randomly generated, then there would be no way for somebody external looking at fraud to know. I mean, you or I might be able to come forward and say, hey, you know, okay, here's my vote. But how do you know that if you're looking at a list of 25,000 people who voted in your precinct or in your county, say, for example, and you're looking at all these randomly generated numbers, how do you know that 21,000 of those votes are not totally phony?
You don't, but you'd have to, you know, If I say so, if I would look up there and say my number is that, I didn't vote for that side. That's one person.
Yeah.
And if another one, out of that 21,000, somebody's going to say something.
No,
so,
but what I'm saying is they just change the way they steal elections. Instead of flipping your vote or my vote, which is what they're doing right now, in my opinion, in some of these places, they would just start generating phony votes with phony numbers. And just by coincidence, no person would ever come forward and say, yes, that 0730412, that's my number. And that person would never come forward because there is no such person. The machine just generated a ghost vote. But there's no way of knowing that, so they would just change their strategy. I don't think you've got it, Steve.
Oh, you're a smart guy, Tom.
good try, but I don't think we're there yet. I really think that the way to do this is ultimately, I mean, this is what I think is very best, is what the Europeans do and what the Canadians just went back to. The Canadians just got rid of their voting machines. They had tried it up in Quebec, and they just got rid of them. And go back to a system where people come in, they vote in person, they vote on paper, and then your civil servants, the people who run the Department of Motor Vehicles, the people in the Department of Education, the people in the Department of Labor, your civil servants take a couple of days off from work, and they manually count the votes, and they do it with representatives of the various political parties watching over their shoulders. And it takes 2 or 3 days. I mean, we don't put people into office for months because back in the old days, in the first 150 years of this country, it took several days to count the vote. And then at the same time, what they do in every other major democracy in the world, they vote on paper. And the other thing that they do is they have exit polls. And the exit polls tell them who won and who lost. And they know within 5 minutes of the time the polls close. And the exit polls have never been wrong in any country except the United States and except in the last three elections. Something wrong with that. 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So, hey, there's a new American way. No one's serving those deserving, but there's less tax to pay. We abuse our might and mock the world as we say. Don't mess with the U.S. of A.
Oh, yeah, don't get in George's way.
Don't mess with the U.S. of A.
He's out there proving he's a man. He's got to prove he's a man. Have you ever noticed he walks like he's been on a horse all his life, yet he's afraid of horses? You never see a photo of him on a horse, yet he tries to walk like he's a cowboy. He's very practiced, you know. I'm bow-legged here. I'm a cowboy from Texas. And then his wife making jokes about him milking a male horse, which now has one of the Christian groups all a Twitter. They're all upset about this, that Laura Bush was not showing proper deference to her husband. That a wife's place is to be deferential, and she was making fun of her husband, and she was questioning his manliness. So, it's... yes, it's just sometimes the news is weirder than the non-news. Bob in Florida on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great. What's up?
I'm on your side, but I'm going to jump your case about something.
Great.
And it's not only you. It's every other left program.
I got it. Let me just warn you in advance, Bob. We're coming up against the top of the hour. We have about a minute and a half, so jump on me
okay.
quick.
All right. The right
don't take that out of context.
Okay. One statement that the righties, every one of them that calls in on the left-wing show makes is about Tom DeLay is that he hasn't broken any law,
right?
Which is only a half-truth. He hasn't broken any federal law, supposedly. However, he has committed felonies under Texas law if he's guilty of what he's been accused of.
Specifically,
and that is why the prosecutor...
Oh, you're talking about taking money from corporations.
Right.
Right. Two of his buddies, in fact, have already gone to jail.
Well, that's my point. I mean, you know, they keep saying he hasn't committed any law or any... I'm sorry, he hasn't done anything illegally. But absolutely he has if the charges stand.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're waiting to see if...
Everybody likes to make the statement and just, you know, blow by it. Without countering on it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Tom. Great program.
Thanks a lot. I should have blown that right back at the guy. You're absolutely right. It really is about corruption when all is said and done. And Tom DeLay really is a corrupt guy. And we do need to point that out. I'm Tom Hartman.
been listening to the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his Vicodin. Maybe he's on to Prozac by now. Who knows? Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live all across this great nation of ours and streaming around the planet as well. Glad to be with you. Debbie in Alabama is on the line. Hey, Debbie, we have a Everything You Know Is Wrong guest. We're going to get to it in just a second, but you had called in about the topic we were talking about in the last hour, the voting machines, and I wanted to get this in real quick. Debbie, what's up?
It will be real quick. Hi, Tom.
Hey.
This is a radical idea. It will cost money, but we have spent a lot of money on these voting machines. Here's an idea I would just like to put out.
Sure.
At all the polling places, it is video recorded with audio. There are computerized screens up on the wall, and it has all the candidates' names. This would be open voting. A voter steps forward. They call out the name of each candidate they want to vote for. After each name they call out, they do press a computer button or what have you. The number changes. You have a Democrat rep, a Republican rep, volunteers, everyone in the place is being recorded. So if there's any question, everything stops. You have an instant replay. You fix it then.
Yeah.
And when the polls close, you have instant results.
Well, this is what the Greeks did. The Greeks had open voting where you would stand up and speak out. In fact, in order to pass any significant piece of legislation, you had to have 6,001 people who were citizens actually show up. You know, they didn't even have a legislature. They had a pure democracy. People actually legislate. The Athenian Greece. This is Athens. But the problem with it in a nation as large and diverse as ours is, and one in which you have an overclass and an underclass that are so starkly separate from each other in terms of wealth and power, is that there are a lot of people who would be intimidated by speaking what they're voting. You know,
I know. That is the big drawback. And I hate that this country has come to that.
Yeah, I do too. And I don't think that we need to fundamentally change that. I mean, that was something that the founders were really clear about, that the right to vote is the beating heart of democracy, and that the right to vote is something that is so private and so personal that it really should be secret. The secret ballot is, and the secret ballot, frankly, was one of the ways that we, for example, was it the 19th Amendment? It was passed in 1920. The amendment to the Constitution, it's either the 19th or 20th Amendment to the Constitution that gave women the right to vote.
Right.
There were a lot of men who would not have voted for that if they had to do it in public.
Oh, I see your point.
You know, the same thing in the 1960s. Some of the civil rights laws that were passed, I mean, some of it was imposed by Bobby Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, but a lot of them were actually voted on and passed. And in fact, back in the 19th century, in the 1860s, similarly, there were civil rights laws that were passed by white people that helped black people. And had those white people had to vote in public, they would have been afraid to do so because of retribution from the Klan and peer pressure. And that's one of the reasons why we have, you know, private voting in this country.
Well, that's a good point. I just wanted to throw out a radical idea because I'm so frustrated over the voting.
I am too, and we all need to keep our thinking caps on and be working this stuff out. Debbie, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you,
Tom. Keep thinking. Keep thinking. We'll come up with something.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. As I said, I think the solution is to go back to paper ballots, just the old-fashioned way that are actually counted by hand by civil servants who are watching it being done. It's how it works in Germany. It works in France. It works in Canada. It works all over the world. Why can't we make it work here? Now, moving along, occasionally there are things that you know, things that you don't know, things that you didn't know that you didn't know. It's time for our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be that you know very little, actually, about what went on here in the United States in the 1950s and 1960s with regard to atomic weapons testing? We have now the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty being debated before the United Nations. A good time to bring in Dennis P. Nelson. Dennis is the Director of Support and Education for Radiation Victims. He said today, I know, well, actually, Dennis, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Rather than reading this release of what you said, I'll just let you say it. The Bush administration is not only not securing this country, they are failing to secure this country. Why, in terms of nuclear proliferation here and around the world, why is that important to us? Tell us your story.
Well, there's two things that I need to say. First, I have to explain that I was born and raised in St. George, Utah in the 1950s. And this town was approximately 120 miles downwind of the Nevada test site. And my hometown was repeatedly saturated with fallout from the test site. And as a consequence, several members of my family have died of cancer at very early ages.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, my sister, my father, my brother, myself, have all had cancer.
I'm terribly sorry to hear that.
Three have died at the average age of 49. The last was my sister, who died in 1992 of colon cancer at age 40.
Yeah, this is terrible. And this people know about, you know, for example, John Wayne was there, you know, downwind, and so when his lung cancer got a little bit of publicity. But I think by and large, most Americans don't realize how many Americans were hit by this. The other thing that I'm curious about, Dennis, if you know anything about this, in the last year or two, I stumbled across this kind of little known fact. That the most widely prescribed prescription medication, the most widely prescribed drug in the United States right now, is Levothyroid or Synthroid or variations thereof, which is the artificial version of thyroid hormones, because there is an absolute epidemic in the United States. We're talking tens of millions, largely women, although many men are affected as well, of people whose thyroids are not working properly. And I remember in the 50s when they were doing the nuclear bomb tests that there was some publicity and some concern about radioactive iodine getting into the grass, getting eaten by the milk cows, getting into the milk and getting into, in the milk that we were drinking. I was downwind in Michigan. I was much farther away than you were. But even there was some concern about those tests and about the milk. Could it be that what we're seeing right now with this epidemic of hypothyroidism has something to do with these nuclear tests?
Well, I think absolutely. There's no question that large amounts of radioactive iodine-131 were scattered across the entire country. In fact, the National Cancer Institute back in, I think it was 97, published a paper where they estimated that between 17,000 and 212,000 cases of thyroid cancer can be attributed directly to the fallout from the Nevada test site.
Wow. And that's...
And that's their own admission. That's
right.
That's the government's admission.
That's got to be the tip of the iceberg. So... Your experience, I mean, you and your family have sacrificed terribly on the altar of national security and the policies where we really should have known better. And, in fact, we did know better at the time, did we not?
Well, I'm sure we did. As we've been able to discover documents that have been released over the years, we've discovered that the government, even though they assured us that everything was okay and that we didn't need to take even the elementary precautions which might have protected us, all the time they knew that there were going to be consequences, and they knew there would be long-term consequences, and yet they covered that up and gave us false assurance that everything was okay. So I'm very concerned about a new wave of testing in Nevada. The new Bush administration's policy to test nuclear weapons in Nevada is, as far as I'm concerned, unconscionable, knowing what we now know about the effects to the downwind population.
Dennis Nelson of Support and Education for Radiation Victims. Dennis, is the Bush administration planning on above-ground testing?
Well, they're talking about this robust earth penetrator, the bunker, so-called bunker buster bomb.
Right.
This bomb will detonate at ground level or slightly below ground level, maybe 20, 30 feet below ground level. The tests in Nevada that were detonated at ground level or below ground level were the very dirtiest of all. That is, they produced the most fallout at the lowest elevations so that they impacted the downwind communities the most.
Is that because they drew up a lot of dust and dirt with them?
Exactly, and they activated it at the same time. So all the bomb products and all the neutron activation products all ended up in this mass of dirt that went downwind and then settled out on in hot spots all over the area in two or three states immediately downwind.
Right. And the Bush administration's plan doing this again. Isn't this also a violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty?
I'm sure it is. Except the Bush administration has said that they intend not to support the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which I think is a monumental error.
They're saying, we don't need those thinking treaties.
Well,
I mean, this is what they said with the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty.
Well,
we're going to back out of it. We're going to retroactively unsign it.
Exactly. Well, the Non-Proliferation Treaty originally had the effect or had the intent that the nuclear powers would decrease their nuclear arsenal to a point where it would eventually reach zero, and in return, the non-nuclear powers would promise not to make nuclear weapons. So,
right.
I think that we have reneged on that promise. I don't think that we have made adequate progress in eliminating nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I don't think the average American realizes that when the United States signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty, do you know what year we first signed it?
No, I'm not positive.
Okay, when we first signed that treaty, that what we were saying was we will actually begin destroying our nuclear weapons. We will not build new ones. And in exchange for this, the countries like India and Pakistan of the world, the emerging third world countries of the world, will agree that they're not going to have nuclear weapons, or if they already have a few, they're going to destroy those as well. We're working toward a non-nuclear world, and the Bush administration is moving us in the exact opposite direction. Dennis, what can Americans do who are concerned about this?
Well, I don't really know exactly what we can do other than to create grassroots movements and I guess
that's force, substantial, Dennis. That's substantial.
Force our representatives to do the right thing.
Yeah, contact your member of Congress and or your senator or both. And you can call the House of Representatives, you can call the Senate by calling 1-877-SOB-USOB, SOB, the letter U, SOB, and that's the toll-free number for Congress. And it will get you to your member of Congress or your state's or your United States Senator. And if you're not sure who your congressman is, probably the Capitol operators who answer that line can even tell you who represents you if you give them your zip code. And let them know that the Non-Proliferation Treaty is something that you think is important, that you don't want to see the Bush administration testing more nuclear weapons here in the United States, that we don't need any new nuclear weapons, thank you very much, that what we really need is a new administration. But that's a whole other rant.
The other thing that I think we can do is to help the American people understand the health consequences of nuclear weapons testing. This is something that the government has downplayed since the very beginning to the point of actually lying about it.
Yeah.
My family is a perfect example of what will happen if we resume nuclear testing, or in the event of a nuclear exchange between countries. The short-term effect would be terrible, but the long-term effect would be devastating, with all of the people that would die of cancer in the 30 years following.
Yeah. Dennis Nelson, support and education for radiation victims. Is there a website, Dennis?
No.
Okay. You're just doing the good work. I salute you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
All right.
And our thoughts and prayers go out to you and your family. I'm sorry to hear about the pain that our nation has inflicted on you, and hope that you can find decent remedies. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It was a slow day, and the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. Now there was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call.
And welcome back, my friends. Unfortunately, these are the days when too many of our soldiers and other people's sons and daughters, husbands and wives, children are dying in a foreign land or in their own land, in the case of Iraq and Iraqis. For what? So George Bush can get himself reelected in 2004. The Iraq War was his reelection strategy. Karl Rove laid it out. They planned this whole thing. It was all about politics. And people are dying. Bush lied and humans died. Usha, I hope I'm not mispronouncing your name, or Usha, in our chat room is in the Netherlands. And she says, George is coming over there. And by the way, if you want to drop into our chat room, just go to tomhartman.com and click live chat. And she says, George is coming over to the Netherlands. And some of the folks in the chat room are speculating, well, you know, is Laura going to be dealing in the coffee shops? You'll recall Kitty Kelly's biography, unauthorized biography of the Bushies. You discover that George's wife, Laura, was the go-go girl in college. She was the one who always was available to sell pot to anybody who wanted it. And now she's just addicted to cigarettes. You know, but she's, you know, once a druggie, always a druggie, I guess. But will she be visiting the coffee shops in Holland? Will the American press point out that she used to be big in the drug scene in college, and now in the Netherlands it's legal, and she would have that opportunity? Somehow I doubt it. Somehow I doubt it. Tom DeLay in deeper trouble. American Airlines, Verizon, and Nissan have pledged to stop financing his legal defense fund. I'm horrified to begin with, to find out that, to begin with, that they were financing him at all. I mean, this is what? American Airlines, Verizon, and Nissan are funding Tom DeLay's defense fund? Well, at least they've stopped. That's sort of like thanking somebody for stopping when they've been hitting you in the face, right? Hey, stop! Thank you for stopping, for no longer hitting me in the face. Yeah. And it took 20,000 emails to get them to stop. 150,000, actually, overall to these three companies. This from the American Progress Action Fund. John Podesta, the president of the fund, says, "We congratulate these companies for responding to the public's concern and taking a positive step toward restoring confidence in ethical government." Yeah. Well, I do. American Airlines said, and I quote from Roger Frizzell, vice president, "American Airlines does not intend to make any future contributions to Representative DeLay's legal defense fund. The $5,000 contribution made 3 years ago was done by an individual who is no longer part of American Airlines." Okay, good. That's good. I understand now why American did that. It was the lone nut. David Fish, the executive director of media relations with Verizon, he said, "It is Verizon's corporate policy not to contribute to legal defense funds. This policy has been in effect for several years. The contribution cited by your organization was made almost 4 years ago before that policy went into effect." Okay, so Verizon is going to be a little less corrupt in the future. Good on you. That's great. Or maybe a whole lot less corrupt. Maybe not corrupt at all. Who knows? Nissan North America issued this statement. They said, "In July 2001, Nissan North America made a $5,000 donation to the Tom DeLay Legal Expense Trust. We have not made any subsequent donations to this trust. We will not make any donations to the trust in the future, and we do not plan to seek a refund." Fred Standish, Director of Corporate Communications. Fred, I think you ought to get your money back. Tom DeLay, he's not helping your image. I mean, if you guys gave, and same to David Fish over at Verizon and Roger Frizzell at American Airlines, y'all ought to be asking for your money back from Tom DeLay, because if you think that he's helping your image in any way at all, I mean, if these were corporate contributions that were designed to promote your business, which of course they have to be, I mean, the law requires that everything you do enhance stockholder value. You have fiduciary responsibilities. You should be getting your money back. Because it ain't helping. It ain't helping at all. No, I don't think Verizon is corrupt. I don't. Or American or Nissan. I think these companies are simply doing what's legal. And my problem is we need to change some of these laws. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And just because he said that there was weapons.
Well, he did, you know.
Hidden under pigsties over there.
Yeah, that's where the nukes were, sure enough.
Just because my boy may never make it home again.
Oh, my.
Don't mean care.
That's right. He's a compassionate conservative.
And if you ask me why, I still believe him. After being lied to 40 times.
Yeah, only 40 times.
I'll give anyone a few more chances. Learning on the job still ain't no crime.
Learning on the job ain't no crime. Oh, and it's hard work. It's just hard work. You just ask George. Louise, that is great. We've got to have that bumper music for the local show, too. I'm now also doing a local show on KPOJ, AM 620 in Portland, Oregon, for the 3 hours before I do this program. And we've moved to Portland, as you know, and we have a goose living on our back deck. She has just taken up residence. There's a duck that hangs out, a male duck and a female goose that are just hanging out there, and they've been hanging out there for the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, one or the other is a little confused. Anyhow, so perhaps you can help us name our goose. No goose jokes, please. Our quote for the day. Actually, we have two of them, back to back. Our quote for the day, number one, quote for the day A, is from Abraham Lincoln. You may fool all of the people some of the time. You can even fool some of the people all of the time, but you cannot fool all of the people all of the time. Abraham Lincoln. And our quote B for the day, from George W. Bush. You can fool some of the people all of the time, and those are the ones you want to concentrate on. George W. Bush, Jr. Yes, indeed. The Social Security issue has been blowing up a little bit here. In the face, some would say, of the cons of the Republicans. And so what do they do when they're going down? And this, of course, is the thing that we've all been so concerned about all these years. Is that they might lash out, that they might reach out and try to harm we the people as they're going down. I mean, here we've seen, you know, look at how many people have died as a result of George's lack of popularity in 2001. He was in the tank, and so he had to have a war. In fact, he had to have, and you know, that got him through 2002, the Afghan war, and then he had to have another war to get him through 2004. And a lot of us are very concerned that he's going to try and have another war to get the Republicans through 2006 and another war for 2008. And his, you know, wealthy buddies seem to like these wars. They make a lot of money on them. And it's just the only thing standing between him and all these wars is we the people. And as long as they've got rigged voting machines and toadies like Ken Blackwell, who will, you know, do whatever it takes, we have some serious problems here in America. Well, in any case, the Social Security is going down the same way the war went down. It's not working out quite as they planned. So they're lashing out at democracy in the workplace. They're lashing out at labor unions. New York Times today had a story about how the Bush administration has warned the AFL-CIO that they're having an opinion on Social Security and expressing that opinion in public may put them at risk, shall we say. I'm telling you, these guys are bullies. Bully with a capital B. Sue wants to know, is it a Canada goose? I honestly don't know. I don't know enough about geese. Zaphod is thinking about Christmas goose. Usha says, name him Moose. Moose the goose. So that's a good one. Pardon me, I'm reading the chat room as I'm on the air. I know I shouldn't do that. By the way, if you want to drop into our chat room, go to tomhartman.com and just click live chat. That'll get you there. Usha says, sipping the Kool-Aid. Actually, a couple of people in there having a conversation in Dutch, too, at the same time. It gets very confusing. Anyhow, so here the AFL-CIO, they have an opinion about Social Security, and their opinion is that George Bush's plan is going to harm their members. And it's going to harm their pension funds, which are invested in the stock market. So please don't do it. And the Bush administration comes along and says, you can't do this. You can't say this. You can't have an opinion. I'll tell you, they have to have an opinion. Because it's their job to look out for the pension fund of their members. This is not rocket science. It's very simple, very straightforward. It is the job of the union to watch out for their pension fund. And if they see something coming down the road that's going to harm their pension fund, whether it's Enron doing shenanigans in the back room or whether it's the Bush administration doing it up front playing with Social Security, they have a fiduciary responsibility. Fiduciary as in, you know, the control of the money. They have, by law, they are required to take an action. They have to do something. The law requires them to do something. And so here we have the Bushies going along saying, oh, the AFL-CIO, they shouldn't stick their nose into this. This is wrong. And you even have Tom DeLay backing away from this insane Social Security program. Even Tom DeLay backing away from it. And so Bush lashing out, freaking out, the Bushies, what do? They go out and they go after organized labor, democracy in the workplace. In the meantime, another GOP adulterous hypocrite exposed. Representative Don Sherwood, represented Pennsylvania's 10th district since 1998, wingnut conservative, who voted for the, this posted by John on the PensitoReview.com blog or website, a wingnut conservative who voted for the 2004 Marriage Protection Act at the same time he was involved in an ongoing extramarital affair with a woman half his age. The affair came to light when his girlfriend called the D.C. police saying that he was trying to choke her. Cynthia Orr, 29, of Rockville, Maryland, she locked herself in a bathroom in his D Street apartment and called the police and told operators that he choked her for no apparent reason. Sherwood, 64, told police he was just giving her a back rub. Washington Metropolitan Police stated in the incident report, both parties have left out significant information or are not willing to discuss in detail what actually happened. Sherwood, by the way, is married. Now, I want to be on record as saying I'm not one who says that anybody else's morality is any of my business. You know, it really isn't. I'm one of those live and let live kind of folks. I guess that makes me a liberal. I believe that what people do in their bedrooms or in their hotel rooms is their own damn business and none of mine. But here's a guy who's out there saying, we need to have government stick its nose into people's lives. We need to have government defending marriage. And after he votes on it, he goes back to his hotel room to get it on with his little sweetie here, half his age. And I just, you know, I have a problem with the hypocrisy of it. I don't have a problem with his having an affair. That's something people do. They're consenting adults. That, you know, this is welcome to the wonderful world of human nature. I know the Christian right, and not just the Christian right, the moralist right, the paranoid right, would get very upset about this. You know what? How dare he? He having fun or violating his marriage vows? But of course, it's wrong. But it's his wrong. It's not our wrong. So I don't think it's any of our business. It's his wife's business. It's his business. It's not our business. But when he then goes onto the floor of the House of Representatives and starts voting, he joins the long list. As John points out in this blog, he says, as an adulterer who voted for a measure that supposedly protects the sanctity of marriage, Representative Sherwood is in illustrious company. Then House Speaker Newt Gingrich helped move the Defense of Marriage Act through the House of Representatives in 1996 while simultaneously conducting an adulterous affair with an aide. His counterpart, Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole, left his first wife for another woman, whom he gave a do-nothing job on his Senate staff. That would be Elizabeth Dole. Additionally, on DOMA, Representative Bob Barr, who drafted the legislation, has been married three times. Congressman Bob Livingstone, who was tapped to take the speakership from Gingrich, lost the position when it was revealed he had been involved in multiple kink-filled orgies to which his wife was not invited, while supporting the GOP values agenda, and, I might add, while attacking Bill Clinton for being, you know, a terrible adulterer. So, anyhow, our hypocrite of the day. Enough on that. This guy's presumably toast in his own party anyway. Marge in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Good morning, Tom. I want to ask you a question about your previous lives as a psychotherapist and NLP practitioner.
Yes.
I was talking with a woman this morning who works in a girls' home, and I asked her how many of those girls were there because of incest and pregnancy from the incest, and she said 90%. And we got to talking about how these girls are treated by other kids. And they're subject to insults like a whore, et cetera. And I was wondering, you know, these girls have withstood tremendous pressure and absence of parents, strong models from parents. And I'm wondering how you would apply NLP to reframe a positive picture for those girls.
I don't have an easy answer for that, Marge. And back when I was the executive director of this residential treatment facility in New Hampshire, virtually all the girls that we came through had been the victims of sexual abuse in one form or another, and many of them actually had been abused in foster care as well. It was very common. And there's not an easy answer for that. You have to deal with the individual cases and the individual people. I'm sorry, I don't have a glib answer for that. It's a tough situation. It's a very difficult one. It's difficult for families. It's difficult for the kids. It's particularly a crisis for these kids when they're in care. So this isn't the Dr. Laura show, you know. So I don't want to get into the whole thing on that. But I'm sorry, I don't have an easy answer for that. It's a tough one. Thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it. Amy in San Diego on the line. Hey, Amy.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to ask you a quick question. You're talking about the unions, and last night on the news, I just caught the tail end of this on our local news here in San Diego, saying that there's a ballot initiative that they're trying to get on here that will limit unions from being able to contribute to political campaigns or have anything to do with politics.
Yeah.
And I want to start a counterattack to this, but I can't find out who these people are. Have you heard anything about this, or how would I go about
it? It's local to San Diego?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I don't. But I can tell you that there have been efforts to limit union activity in politics that go all the way back to the 1930s when the Wagner Act was first passed that made, you know, that essentially sanctioned unions in the United States in the first place.
Right.
And in fact, unions do have limits on what they can do. There are some substantial limits on what unions can do politically, which is why the Bush administration is threatening the AFL-CIO today.
Absolutely.
They're not threatening to pass a law. They're threatening to enforce existing laws.
Yes. What I want to do is I want to say, okay, you're doing this against the unions, I want to bring awareness to. See all these corporations that are doing it? They need to stop, too. If it's going to be us, it's going to be them, too.
I agree.
I think people don't know about this corporate stuff.
No, the fact that billions of dollars are passed out by corporations in the United States. I mean, the last election cycle, 2004, cost $4 billion. Most of that money did not come from people like you and me, Amy. Most of that money came from big corporations and big churches.
Yep.
And it's just wrong, and we need to stop that. And some of that money actually came from big unions as well. And I think that, you know, it's fine to say, okay, if unions are not going to be able to participate in politics, neither are corporations, period.
Yes,
and neither are churches. Let's just clear the deck and say the only entities that can participate in politics are the entities who can run for office and who can vote, and that is individual human beings.
I totally agree, and that's what I want to try to do here in San Diego. So I sent some emails out to some local unions, see if maybe they know. So I'm going to try to find out.
I would suggest you just call the AFL-CIO and ask them.
Oh, that's a great idea. I will. I'll call them right now.
Yeah, and you might also want to contact the International Labor Communications Association, ILCA. Their website is ilcaonline.org. We had their communications director on the program yesterday or the day before.
Great.
Let's see. Alec is his name.
Okay.
Alec. And his last name is escaping me at the moment. But anyhow, you can give Alec a call, and he probably would know, or he would know how to find out.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Tom. I appreciate you so much.
Yep, thank you, Amy.
Okay, all right.
Thanks for the
Bye.
Call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Alicia is on the line in Humboldt County. Hey, Alicia. Oh, Alice, I'm sorry.
It's Alice.
It's Alice. I need stronger glasses, Alice.
Good morning, Tom. That's morning. All right. I've been there.
Yeah.
I love your program.
Thank you so much.
Very crooked people have stolen our whole government.
I agree, and I'm so pleased that you can hear us there on, it's KGOE, right, in Eureka, and that, you know, so many stations are carrying our program and spreading the word, because it is important that we wake people up.
We all need to put our heads on finding an answer to this. if they are able to rig another election, I don't think we will ever get our country back.
Well, I hope you're wrong, Alice. I suspect that they're going to try and rig another election, and it does present a significant danger to democracy. I agree with you. And that's why I think that it's so important that the Democratic Party, if nobody or somebody, be organizing and pulling some money together to organize something so that we can watch for stolen elections in the 2006 election. We can, you know, plan right now to be doing the exit polls so that we can find out, that we can catch these guys if they try and steal this election from us.
Well, I think people are trying.
Yeah. And you're spreading the good word there in Humboldt County, as are so many other people.
Well,
I do appreciate it. Okay, Alice, thanks so much for the call. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work. Boy, Alice is one of my heroes, I have to say. 91 years old, and she's still out there plugging. I tip my hat to you, Alice. I am so pleased that you are still with us and still speaking out and still fighting the good fight. I think of Studs Terkel also, who's been on this program, in fact. Usha in the chat room, she says, Tom, we love Alice. Chat room loves Alice. Okay, Alice, a special message to you from the chat room. They send you their love. You can get to the chat room by going to TomHartman.com and click on live chat. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. We need some shelter from George and his insane policies. The Dutch are considering arresting him as a war criminal. I just got this link in email. I just forwarded it to Louise and Paul, and we'll have more details about this for you in the next hour. But the Dutch are apparently considering, when George W. shows up in Holland over the next few days, arresting him as a war criminal. Fascinating concept. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Xavier in California on the line. Hey, Xavier, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. I wanted to come out of left field here with an idea. There's a...
Literally left field, right?
Well, some might say right field. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I'm concerned about working-class white males not being too progressive and going over to the side of, like, listening to conservative talk radio shows. And
there's an epidemic of it.
Yeah. And one of the things I found is that there's not a lot of place for... working class white males, and you'd said earlier in just a little bit ago about I forget who it was, but they were having an affair with somebody half their age.
Yeah.
And one of the things I found as a single male is that I get I'll see women, you know, in progressive circles that I run with, women who date men who are you know, like, say, of a different race or something, that's celebrated. But a man who dates a woman who's, like, say, Asian, or a woman who's half his age, they're kind of looked down upon.
Yeah, we still have the vestiges of tribalism kind of burned into our DNA, and that's human nature. I mean, the overcoming bigotry and racism and ageism and all these other isms is actually, in my experience, my observation, shall we say, is something that requires intent. It's something that we actually have to do, because there is this instinct to, oh, it's my family, I'm going to protect them. It's my community, I'm going to protect them. And there were times when those different people, those people who looked different from us, were actually coming to get us. And, you know, that's part of the multi-million-year history of the human race. And so it's not going to go away tomorrow. But we can work to try to be more egalitarian and more understanding. Yeah, so that's just an important thing. Yeah, good point, Xavier. Good point. It's interesting. The other point is that the fastest growing area of right wing talk radio right now is not among white males. It's in Spanish on Spanish language radio stations, and it's being promoted by the Republican Party and big money within the Republican Party. And that's something that's totally below the radar of most Americans, is the explosion of Spanish language right wing talk radio in America. Anyhow, it's Tom Hartman here with you, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number. And TomHartman.com, our chat room, if you'd like to drop in and have some interaction with some of the finest minds in all of cyberspace. We're trying to name the goose that has taken up residence in our backyard here in Portland, or on the back deck of our house. We have a goose and a duck that have found each other. And for 2 weeks, this goose and this duck have been hanging out, and both of them a little strange. So maybe Guckert Goose? Gannon Goose? I don't know. Maybe it's just that, or is that a little too harsh? We've had a number of good suggestions. Tomette, yeah, right. Somebody, Usha in our chat room. This poor goose is all alone, and just hanging out here all alone for months. Well, this duck comes and hangs out too, and I'm not sure exactly what the gender is of the goose. I'm still figuring that out. Although probably we could get George W. out here to figure out which it is. But then he'd want to milk it. Oh, no. Never mind. Anyhow, if you want to help us name the goose, drop into our chat room and let us know what names you think would be a good one for our goose. We'll get one of these days we'll get a photo of the goose up in the chat room instead of a picture of me when I was 17. So, Richard Dearlove, he's the guy who laid it all out. Never in our wildest dreams, writes Ray McGovern of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity Group, VIPS, or VIPS, or VIPs. Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. These guys are ex-spies, right? And here we have a guy who's an ex-spy, and he says, never in our wildest dreams did we think that we would see those words in black and white and beneath a secret stamp, no less. But now here they are. This has been leaked to the media in the UK, and people over there are just absolutely horrified by this. This is the kind of thing that could really, really, truly harm Tony Blair's efforts and attempts to get reelected. You know, what is going on? Tony Blair, it turns out, Tony Blair and George Bush definitely did collude to lie to the people of the United States and England for political gain for George W. Bush. I mean, this is absolutely outrageous. For political gain. A war to get elected. People say no war for oil. Well, yeah, sort of. I don't think that this was a war for oil. We could have bought all the oil we wanted. This was a war for an election campaign. At the same time that George W. Bush was running around very self-righteously saying, no, I have no plans to go to war. At the same time, this from August of 2002, a month after this memo. This memo came out July 23rd, 2002. Back in August of 2002, here's George W. Bush.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Now, setting aside the fact that that's an incredibly arrogant remark, and it's constitutionally wrong, the Constitution of the United States says only Congress has the right to decide when and where we go to war. Only the Congress can make war. The President cannot. And James Madison, the father of the Constitution, went on at some length to talk about how the reason for this was because we wanted to avoid the domination of kingly forces, that the power to make war was one of the greatest oppressors, or the potential oppressors of humankind, and therefore that power had to be in the hands of the body that was closest to the people. So they left it to Congress. Only Congress can make war, not the president, not the Supreme Court. It is a power which is solely held by the legislative branch, period. And not only that, obviously George W. knows nothing about constitutional law. Not only that, but here he is saying he's not going to go to war. We'll hear it one more time.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
So in July of 2002, this is before the 2002 elections, after George Bush has had his meeting with Karl Rove about his 2004 election campaign, as documented in Bob Woodward's book, Richard Dearlove, who is the head of MI6, MI6 is the British equivalent of the CIA, Richard Dearlove comes back from a meeting in the United States and briefs his compatriots at MI6. And he says, and I'm quoting now from a secret document that has been leaked to the press in the UK, and why this isn't the lead story on ABC, NBC, and CBS News is beyond me. Well, we know why. Because the corporate goons who own these networks are in bed with George W. Bush. And they're in bed with the Republicans. They know that the Republicans serve corporate interests above we the people. And the Democrats, to some extent, what few Democrats there are left who are really Democrats, serve we the people rather than corporate interests. And so, of course, they're going to do everything they can to promote Republicans. So anyhow, here's the, he says, President Bush has decided to remove Saddam Hussein by launching a war that is to be, quote, justified by the conjunction of terrorism and weapons of mass destruction, period. Justified by the conjunction of terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. See, we thought it was all about oil. We thought that Dick Cheney gave it away.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant resource, second only to Saudi Arabia.
And we thought that maybe there was something to those weapons of mass destruction.
The evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Saddam Hussein has held numerous meetings with Iraqi nuclear scientists.
Lie.
A group he calls his nuclear mujahideen.
Lie.
His nuclear holy warriors.
Lie.
Facing clear evidence of peril. We cannot wait for the final proof. The smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
And now we have this memo from Richard Dearlove saying that President Bush has decided to remove Saddam Hussein. This in July of 2002. Think back, folks. This is before the big protest marches. This is before the election. This is before the UN resolution. This is July 23rd, 2002. President Bush has decided to remove Saddam Hussein by launching a war that is to be justified by the conjunction of terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. It goes on to say the intelligence and facts are being fixed around the policy. The intelligence and facts are being fixed around the policy. Bush was actually telling us the truth when he said,
if this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Yeah. Very funny. Very, very funny. And, of course, that one candid moment in a news conference.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
No evidence. But that's not the one that got all the press. It was more things like this.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
For those of you who've read 1984 by George Orwell, that will have a particular significance, I'm sure. So, and then Jack Straw, at this point, Foreign Secretary Jack Straw confirms that Bush has decided on war, but notes that stitching together justification would be a challenge since, quote, the case was thin, end quote. Straw noted that Foreign Secretary Jack Straw, he's the equivalent in the UK, the equivalent of Colin Powell, the Secretary of State in the United States. Straw noted that Saddam was not threatening his neighbors, and his weapons of mass destruction capability was less than that of Libya, North Korea, or Iran. So why go after him? Well, because we've bombed his Air Force into non-existence, into smithereens, whatever. We've taken out much of his army. He's got an army made up of 15-year-olds in rags. He has no Navy. He has no Marine Corps. He's got nothing. He's got a bunch of conscripts, a bunch of people who are in the Army because they were forced to be there. It's the Reagan strategy. Take out a country that can't possibly fight back against you. And if they have some natural resources you want, all the better. Like the Panama Canal. Like Grenada. If you're going to pick a fight with somebody, pick a fight with somebody that you can easily beat. And yet at the same time, you can tell the world, these guys are really tough. You know, Iraq has the... bought it. Well, they had the help of Fox News and CBS and NBC and ABC. And you got now Brian Williams on NBC saying that he feels that it's important as an American. He has a responsibility to listen to Rush Limbaugh every day. I can't watch NBC News. Every time I see Brian Williams, I remember him talking like that. It's like, what? In the following months, the case would be buttressed by a well-honed U.S.-UK intelligence-turned-propaganda machine, writes Ray McGovern. The argument would be made solid enough to win endorsement from Congress and Parliament by conjuring up aluminum artillery tubes misdiagnosed as nuclear material, forgeries alleging Iraqi attempts to obtain uranium in Africa, tall tales from a drunken defector about mobile biological weapons laboratories, bogus warnings that Iraqi forces could fire WMD-tipped missiles within 45 minutes of an order to do so. Remember, that was Tony Blair's. Oh, look out, folks, here in the UK, Saddam has nuclear-tipped missiles, weapons of mass destruction. He can put it 45 minutes away from us. That's all it's going to take him. Dodgy dossiers fabricated in London. And a U.S. national intelligence estimate thrown in for good measure. All this, as Dear Love notes dryly, despite the fact that, quote, there was little discussion in Washington of the aftermath after military action. Little discussion of the aftermath? Well, in retrospect, gee, no surprise. Another nugget from Dear Love's briefing and his bloodless comment that one of the U.S. military options under discussion involved, I'm quoting Ray McGovern here, involved, quote, now this is from the secret memo, a continuous air campaign initiated by an Iraqi casus belli. Casus belli being, I don't know if it's Italian or Latin, but I believe it's Latin. I think it's older than just, you know, the recent Rome. It means the cause, the reason for the crusade. The rationale, the excuse that the planners of this campaign are going to try to find an appropriate casus or casus belli? Case, perhaps I'm mispronouncing it. It's been a long time since I took Latin. The discussion at No. 10 Downing Street on July 23, 2002 calls to mind the first meeting of George W. Bush's National Security Council in 2001. Paul O'Neill, remember our Treasury Secretary, Paul O'Neill? He wrote in his book, after the fact, he wrote that in 2001, this was before 9/11, this was the week that these guys took power in the United States. In 2001, George Bush said he was going to take out Saddam. He's got to pay back. He's got to show that his daddy's not a real man, but that he is. That's why he walks the way he is. He does. Yeah, he's a real man. Heavily equipped. 20 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Lather was 30 years old today. They took away all of his toys.
So he went and declared war in Iraq.
His mother sent newspaper clippings to him about his old friends who stopped being boys. There was Howard C. Green just...
Oh, my. Welcome back, my friends. Sorry I got a little worked up there about George W. in the last segment. It's just... When you think about the people, we just had on the program a couple of days ago a woman whose son died in Iraq. And when I think that that was done as part of a re-election strategy that was carefully thought out between Karl Rove, George Bush, and Tony Blair, it makes my blood boil. So, but I'll leave it at that. Ellen with the Talk Radio News Service with us, Ellen Ratner from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. you so much. Interesting, took a couple interesting things. First of all, Nancy Pelosi, who is the minority leader in the House, had a news conference this morning I was at. She said that these guys that have said that they're going to recuse themselves from the delay business can't exactly do it. They first have got to submit something in writing, and then the committee as a whole has to vote on it, and then they can recuse themselves. You just can't drop off something because you choose to. You have to submit something in writing, explain to you why you want to recuse yourself, and then the committee has to vote on it. So that.
So they've got to make a confession. And what about the other three Republican members of the committee who have received money from delay? Any expectation that they'll say anything?
Well, we just don't know yet. That's up for grabs. Now, it's interesting, the White House Bulletin, which is one of the many publications there, has an exclusive story today saying that there is some White House support for Clinton taking the top United Nations posts.
Instead of Bolton?
No. This would be Secretary General.
Oh, but the UN Charter doesn't allow permanent Security Council members to send in somebody to be the head of the UN.
Well,
I may be wrong on that, but I thought that the UN Charter was written in such a way that no Security Council member could ever have a representative of its nation be the Secretary General, and
that may be. But there is apparently some support for it at the Bush White House.
Huh.
And the reason for that is they're apparently saying a liberal Democrat is better than some of the whack jobs they have now.
Well, don't you love the language that these cons use?
That's why I just had to tell you this story. I don't care it's very interesting what the White House is saying.
I find it very strange, too, that they think that Bill Clinton's a liberal Democrat.
Yeah, well, I agree.
I mean,
Everybody is.
Yeah, he's the best Republican president we've had since Eisenhower.
I do not disagree with you on that one. Okay, back to what's happening at the White House today. The president is meeting with the president of Nigeria, and it's very interesting. The White House is very interesting in bringing up today, Victoria was actually at that briefing, the whole issue of Darfur and the Sudan and all that kind of thing.
Good.
The White House press corps was very interested in talking about Charles Taylor, as you know, from Liberia.
Right.
Who is in Nigeria.
Pat Robertson's business buddy.
Yeah, and what are they going to do to bring Charles Taylor to trial? Well, the White House didn't want to talk about that.
Yeah, well, that's because he's in bed with Pat Robertson. They're business partners in a diamond mine.
Two other things have come up, and that is Alan Greenspan is at the Federal Reserve Bank in Chicago's annual meeting. He is concerned, he said, about the proliferation of derivative products because he said some of them will not have been adequately tested by market stress.
Yep.
And that people must be aware of risk management challenges. He also today...
This is his way of saying, look out, something big is coming.
Right. He also talked about asking Congress to limit the multi-million dollar holdings of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
And that's the big that's coming that I'm very concerned about is that the bottom's going to fall out of the real estate market, and that's going to take down the middle class with it. It could throw us into another Great Depression.
That is nothing truer has been said by other than you, Tom,
okay,
on that one.
Ellen Radner, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's always wonderful to hear your voice. Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service. It's Tom Hartman with you, 29 minutes past the hour, in the real free speech zone, the Tom Hartman radio program. No barbed wire, no pass from the RNC necessary, just show up.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. We just want the truth. That's all we want. Just the truth. Well, you know, it's not the strong point of the Bush administration. It's not, you know, truth is not their thing. By the way, in the last hour, I mentioned that in Holland there was a movement to have George W. Bush arrested as a war criminal when he shows up on Saturday to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe. And there's a bunch of groups who had suggested that he should be arrested for as responsible for the deaths of civilians in Afghanistan and Iraq in his re-election war. His re-election campaign war, and because of Washington's refusal to recognize the International Criminal Court, the ICC, the world's first permanent war crimes court. But the High Court of The Hague, the Dutch equivalent of the United States Supreme Court, turned it down. So, his judgment, the court said the case was political and that the demands could have far-reaching consequences for U.S.-Dutch relations. Yeah, I think so! If Holland arrested the President of the United States, it would have far-reaching consequences for U.S.-Dutch relations. I'm not sure they'd necessarily be bad consequences, but they would be consequences. A third of people in Holland are opposed to Bush even showing up in their country. Even showing up. So, we'll see how it plays out. You know, Bush will be doing when he goes to Holland. He'll be doing the same thing he did the last time he was in Europe when he visited England, for example. He was so offended the people who lived in London. They clear like 10 square blocks around him. They've got helicopters. He lives in a bubble. He sees no protesters. He hears no protesters. It's the Three Monkeys administration. Speaking of seeing and hearing, Michael Chertoff. You may have already forgotten about him. He's the guy who's the Homeland Security Secretary. He took Tom Ridge's place. He hasn't been out there. It's not his style to pop up on TV every other day and say, "We're going from orange to red. We're going from red to green. We're going from green to blue. We're going from blue to chartreuse. We're going from..." Oh, that was Jeff Gannon's idea. Excuse me. It's just not his style to do that. But he does have an agenda, and this is the agenda that we were all warned about. That this guy is an absolute freak about knowing all the details of everybody's life. And here from the National Journal, Homelands by Siobhan Gorman, National Security Secretary Michael Chertoff this week floated an idea to start a nonprofit group. Now let me pause right there and explain why he has to do this. It is against the law in the United States for the federal government or for state governments to do a whole lot of things, including snooping on you and me. It's against the law. These are protections. This is because of the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. The Fourth Amendment, which says that the right of privacy, it doesn't use the word privacy because in 1778 or 1787 when the Constitution was written, the word privacy meant toilet functions. It doesn't use the word privacy, but they're talking about what we call the right to privacy. They say the right of the right to security and in the papers and effects in the homes of the persons shall not be abridged. Except unless somebody swears before a judge that they saw, you know, evidence of a crime. In other words, you have to have a search warrant. And the search warrant has to be issued by a judge. And the judge has to be convinced that there's a crime. Otherwise, you have privacy rights. Well, the government can't violate those privacy rights. So what Chertoff wants to do is he wants to create an independent agency separate from the government that can do this. He wants to create an agency. He says it should be a nonprofit corporation that will collect information on private citizens, flag suspicious activity, and send names of suspicious people to his department. Why? Because it's illegal for him to do it. Are you starting to get a little concerned? The idea, which Chertoff tossed out in an April 27th meeting with security industry officials, is reminiscent of the Defense Department's now-dead Total Information Awareness Program, that sought to sift through heaps of foreign intelligence information to root out potential terrorist activity. Only this time it's not foreign intelligence information. It's you and me. According to one techie who attended the April 27 meeting, Chertoff told the group, "Maybe we could create a nonprofit and track people's activities, and an algorithm could red flag individuals. Then the nonprofit could give us the names." How sweet. Chertoff also suggested that private industry form a group to collect proprietary information about cyber and other infrastructure and breaches in their security from companies, scrub it of identifying information, aggregate it, and pass it along to the department. By coincidence, such a thing already exists. It's the companies that keep our credit records. Homeland Security Department Press Secretary Brian Rorcase says the secretary was responding to a hypothetical question with a hypothetical answer. Yeah. He did not offer specific programmatic content or discuss any specific proposed approach. Rather, he was discussing in general terms the importance of this issue of balancing security and privacy. Yeah, no, he was talking about how to get around protections put into place by the founders of this country to protect us from government run amok. Because the meeting was closed to the press, Harris Miller, president of the Information Technology Association of America, whose meeting it was, Chertoff, along with 50 or so other security industry executives from companies like Microsoft, Oracle, and Verizon. Because the meeting was closed to the press, Miller would not discuss the comments. One meeting participant said that Chertoff told the group that having a nonprofit collect names rather than the government, quote, would alleviate some of the concerns people have, end quote. Sorry, it's not going to alleviate my concerns. In fact, this particular participant said, this is what made me sort of shift in my seat. It sounds like investigating every person for no reason. Right. He was particularly concerned by an unknown formula created by this new group. The he being the person who was there in the meeting with Chertoff and the security officials from all these big corporations. A new security algorithm that's going to determine who gets the red flags. This, my friends, is fascism. It may be friendly fascism, but it's fascism. It is the merging of corporate and state interests, and now the 1984 looking in on us, checking us out. Meanwhile, in today's news, could this be part of Tony Blair's campaign to get his seat? If George W. Bush is willing to have a phony war and kill 100,000 civilians and over 1,700 American soldiers, if he's willing to do that in order to get reelected, is Tony Blair willing to have one of his agents blow up a phony hand grenade in New York to get reelected? It would be great publicity. Hey, he's the security prime minister. No, probably not. Just a rhetorical question. Probably not. And, you know, truth to be told, Tony Blair is not actually running for re-election. His party is. Because you can't vote for Tony Blair if you live in the United Kingdom. You only get to vote for your local member of parliament. And many of these local MPs, members of parliament, are good people. Particularly in the Labour Party. And so the local folks are reluctant to kick him out. So they'll probably get reelected. They'll probably get voted back in. And then the Labour Party, you know, Blair's the head of it. He's prime minister again. It's going to be the Labour Party who's going to have to throw him out, I'm telling you. And that day may come. May come soon. As more and more of these leaks come out, like this thing with Richard Dearlove pointing out that Blair and Bush conspired to lie to the citizens of the United States and the citizens of Great Britain in order to promote George W. Bush's political ambitions, in order to make him the war president. So anyhow, this morning we had this two small makeshift grenades in a sidewalk planter go off. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. A few windows were broken. Who is the economy for anyway? This, I think, is a really important question. And it's the question that there was a broad consensus back in the 30s in the United States, in the 40s, and even the 50s, I would say, and probably the early 60s, where people understood the purpose of the economy was to support we the people, that we the people allow our government to mint currency and regulate businesses and even allow them their existence, because there's some benefit to us in it, And we allow people to do business in our country in the way that they do business because it helps create a middle class. It helps create, you know, prosperity in the country. But we regulate business. Unregulated business is a monster. It will eat alive democracy. Even Joe Kennedy understood that. That's why he was the first chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Unregulated business is the prescription for corruption and for a banana republic. I mean, that's what you have in these. You want to see unregulated business? Go to Nigeria. You want to see unregulated business? Go to Guatemala in the 1950s. So here now, compare the pensions. In Luxembourg, when you retire, you get 100% of your average pay. In Austria, Hungary, Spain, and Turkey, you get 75%. What do we get in the United States? For those who get pensions, it averages around 36 to 38%. In most of Europe, the work week is 35 hours. In 2001, France's National Planning Agency found indisputable evidence. This from, by the way, seeingtheforest.com archives. In 2001, France's National Planning Agency found indisputable evidence that work time reduction was creating vast numbers of new jobs, helping to bring unemployment down from 12.5% in 1997 to an 18-year low of 8.6%. Just makes a certain amount of sense. I mean, you know, there's almost so much work to go around. If you have people working fewer hours, you have more people working. This isn't rocket science. The European Union Working Time Directive, EU Work Time Directive, this is a law among the EU countries. The EU countries got together and they said, okay, you know, how are we going to make all this happen? The European Union, you know, we got to regulate business and governments and rules and all this. What are we going to come up with? How's it going to work? And they came up with their regulations for business. Dutch, German, Italian workers, 30 vacation days a year. Most other EU companies, 5 weeks, 25 working days. 5 weeks of vacation a year, required. The directive, the EU directive, requires a minimum of four paid weeks. No wonder, seeingtheforest.com notes, no wonder Republicans hate Europe. Europe is setting an example. In 1998, for example, a national strike shut down Denmark over the demand for a sixth week of vacation, which was phased in by adding additional paid leave days. Who is the economy for, after all? And the important point about this, and this is the thing that is so often missed, is that why is it that Europe has this ethic that the purpose of the economy is to support the people, rather than that the purpose of the people is to support the rich? Well, in part, it's because Europe had a thousand-year history of the people being serfs and peons and peasants and supporting the rich, and they said, we don't want that anymore. Ain't the way we want it to be. But beyond that, and perhaps more important, the real reason is because when Europe fell in World War II, because this is when this all began. This all began in the late 40s. After Europe fell in World War II, and we went in and we rebuilt Europe, it was liberal U.S. Democrats, Roosevelt and Truman, who put Europe back together. And we inculcated in their minds and built into their constitutions the notions of what a liberal democracy would look like. A country that works to help its people rather than just to help those with inherited wealth or the corporate multinationals. And they've been doing it ever since, and they're quite happy with it. They're very pleased with it. It works very well. They're saying, thank you very much. Now I get it. Whereas under the Bush administration, conservative administration here in the United States, we go into Iraq and we remake Iraq in the vision of the conservatives. Just like Truman and Roosevelt remade Europe in the vision of the liberals, we make remake Iraq in the vision of the conservatives. Absolutely free trade, throw down the borders, any corporation can go in and just strip mine the country for labor. They can take anything they want. There are no restrictions on taking all the profit out of the country. Unions are banned. It's against the law to form a union. It's a crime in Iraq. The press is regulated. Al Jazeera is banned. We've created a mini-conservative state in Iraq, and what's it doing? It's going down in flames. It's leading to civil war. The electricity isn't working. The water isn't working. Oh, that's because of the war. No, I'm sorry. It's been a year and a half. It's been 2 years. It's been a while since we had that war. No, it's conservative economic policies that are destroying Iraq right now. We have created a neoconservative state in Iraq, and it's going down in flames. And we created a liberal and progressive democracy in Europe after World War II, and it is prospering. At the level of the individual, at the level of the average person, Europe is a paradise. It is the American dream. It's happening in Europe. But 25 years of conservative economics in the United States, boy, we're having a tough time. We're having a really tough time. 45 million uninsured. No uninsured in Europe. None. We need to make some changes in this country. We need to bring democracy back to this country. You can do it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Early in the evening, we're going to go out and vote. No, no, no. Unwind, no, no. Welcome back, my friends. Oh, some of this music is just so good. Welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour. Or is it five? 15 seconds, it'll be 4 minutes before the hour. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mr. Berlusconi has some thoughts about Mr. Bush. We'll get to that in just a minute. First, Tom in Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. You're right about the hypocrisy there where Europe was conquered by liberals. And look what we gave them, democracy in the workplace, and Iraq was conquered by Republicans, and they outlawed labor. So that right there tells you the whole story, right?
Yeah. And in a nutshell. I mean, and it gets worse. I mean, you go through all the various articles in the Iraqi Constitution that the neocons put in there, or the conservatives, or whatever you want to call these loonies that put in there. It's the Rush Limbaugh paradise, and that's what you see.
Yeah, I get German television via satellite here, and they're commemorating all, you know, VE Day and all that stuff. And they were saying how they were thankful that they got genuine democracy, strong labor law, period, you know. And you can see Iraq, it's the opposite.
Huh. Sprichst du etwas Deutsch?
Jawohl. Meine Frau ist Deutsch.
Oh, so. Therefore. So fort.
Now we got a German radio program going.
Yeah. Vielleicht wir müssen nur Deutsch sprechen jetzt.
Genau.
Genau, yeah. Okay. Tom, thanks for the call.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiederhören.
Yeah.
Talk to you later. Good to hear from you. Oh, my. No, we don't want to do that. My German is bad enough that we need not inflict it on any of our German-speaking listeners who really speak German. Ich habe nur Straßendeutsch. Okay, Berlusconi. Speaking of Europe, Berlusconi comes out and he says he's now publicly humiliated. The United States has murdered one of his equivalent of the CIA agents, is one of his top officers, tried to murder a journalist in his from his country who was speaking truth about what Bush was doing in Iraq and what's going on, the civil war that's happening there. And he's humiliated and embarrassed by this, and so he lies low for a week or so. Finally, he's got to say something. And so he does one of these double negatives. The absence of intention does not rule out responsibility. In other words, you know, yeah, we're going to hold responsibility. He says, but I want to dispel any possible confusion. There's no link between the killing of Calipari and our country's mission in Iraq. Oh, my. Berlusconi wimps out. Well, he doesn't wimp out. He goes along with Bush. Of course. You know, fascist, no fascist. It's just that simple. Thanks for being with us today on the program. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program.